T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
The 206 guy says, what if the Russians hack the robot umpires? That's right.
Our longtime overnight guy is vexed by the possibility of robot umpires, but sounds like they did a pretty good job because they were employed for the first time in professional, if unaffiliated, baseball. And here to tell us all about it is a guy who saw it, wrote about it, and talked to everybody. Wrote a comprehensive piece about it, Dan Connolly, who is on Twitter at Dan Connolly2016. He of WOKY in Pennsylvania and also a longtime Orioles beat guy. He joins us on the Alpamonte Ford hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. Dan, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. And it says the fairly seamless. And while that could also describe this year's Major League Baseball, instead it is describing the performance of TrackMan in calling balls and strikes. When all was said and done, how did you reach that conclusion?
Well, I mean, there were a couple glitches. But at the same time, the glitches were really kind of imperceptible to us. I mean, I was up in the press box. You know, I work for The Athletic in Baltimore, but it's about 45 minutes north of us. York, Pennsylvania is. And York is one of 8 teams in the Atlantic League. And, you know, the Atlantic League is an unaffiliated baseball league. However, it has become a partner with Major League Baseball in rules implementation. And basically, you know, what the Atlantic League is pretty much for like a triple-A, double to triple-A level baseball players. Most of those guys have played professionally, some have gotten to the major, some have double A and triple A, but then, you know, they basically have no place to play. And so they're going to the Atlantic League, hope of getting back to the affiliated baseball. And so do the umpires. And so the umpire who was doing this on Wednesday for the All-Star game had reached as high up as triple A, and he had been umping for over 10 years. So he understood the game very well. And he said he's kind of a slow umpire in his balls and strikes in a sense anyway. So you could see a lag, maybe 2 seconds or so, from the point where the pitch was caught by the catcher to the point where he actually did a ball or strike call. Besides that, no one would have known. And at least 3 different times, for a 3-pitch sequence, I think maybe in the second inning, there was no contact between his Bluetooth, and he basically did not hear what the ball or strike was, and he called it on his own. And then for half an inning in the middle of the game, all contact was lost between the Bluetooth went out, and, you know, as it does for all of us at times. It went out, and for a half inning, he basically called the game like he normally would call a game. And then after that half inning, he went back to the tech guy. They got it put together in roughly a minute or so, and he was back in umpiring. During that time, I did not notice that there was anything different going on. I couldn't tell because you can't really see what's going on. He's just simply, you see an umpire put his hand up or whatever it might be, guys. So really, it was kind of interesting to me. I mean, he told us that there were some gaps and problems, but for the most part, we really couldn't see that except for the slight lag, from caught pitch to him making the call.
So, Dan, if the expectation is that at some point this kind of technology could be implemented in Major League Baseball or maybe even across all of baseball, what are the expectations for how much better the technology can get? And what's the support staff like on hand? Is it a dude and a laptop? Is it a larger truck that can work this thing and maybe smooth out some of those technological issues?
I mean, the truck thing has not happened right now. It was a dude and a laptop. But Major League Baseball, one of their Major League Baseball's biggest dudes, was there over his shoulder as well watching it. Morgan Sword, one of the vice presidents of Major League Baseball, was there. There was three overall staff members, one down on the field, one in the press box, and another one also kind of floating back and forth and in the press box. Basically how it works, if you guys want me to kind of get rudimentary in case, you know, the listeners don't know, basically what happens is there is and this has been installed in all 8 of the Atlantic League parks, there is basically a Doppler radar screen that is set up attached to the roof, in this particular case, New York, Pennsylvania, over top of the home plate. And it has the sensors, and it basically has what the strike zone is. Now, the strike zone, the way they're calling it, is roughly letters to bottom of the knees, or, you know, the ball and a half up from the belly button or the belt to the bottom of the knees. And that is basically, it registers each pitch and feeds it to a computer. Now, that computer has TrackMan data already affixed onto it, okay? And the TrackMan data basically has a strike zone for each individual hitter. So Aaron Judge and Jose Altuve would not have the same strike zone, okay? It would basically be based on their height, and on their batting stance, that kind of stuff. Now, most of these guys have already have a TrackMan data page because they've played professional baseball for the last 5 years. Not all of them, but as long as they have in affiliated baseball, then they already had that page created because Major League Baseball has been doing the TrackMan data stuff for exit velocity and things like that for 5 years or so. So basically that information gets fed to the computer, which then emits the signal to the umpire. And the umpire has an iPhone with him and an earbud in his ear, and it tells him whether it's a ball or a strike, and then he makes his call. So there is maybe a 2-second lag, 3 seconds. It seems like it differed per pitch, but for the most part, it's a very brief lag. And at this point right now, I mean, obviously they can bring in more technology. Obviously you can do the trucks and things like that. But right now, it's just simply Doppler radar to computer to umpire.
What I found fascinating, too, was that you had people talking about their experience with it. And when an umpire admits that, yeah, the framing job that experienced professional defensive catcher did would have gotten me. There were a number of TrackMan-called balls that the umpire admitted, yeah, I would have called them strikes. We're seeing the obviation of framing, which ultimately will be a good thing for everybody involved, even as some people who have cultivated that skill are not going to be able to benefit from it anymore.
Right. The one catcher, one of the all-star catchers in York, a guy named Jamie Elton, played AAA for Cincinnati and for Washington. He's known as a good defensive catcher, and he takes a lot of pride in that. And there was actually a really interesting situation in the second inning where another former major leaguer, Joey Tereslavich, was at the plate with a 2-strike call. The ball was clearly low to all of our eyes. It was a ball for all of us to see. Tereslavich assumed it was a ball, and 2 seconds went by, and the umpire hung him up. And Tereslavich turned to the umpire, glared as players will, and the umpire just pointed to his ear, just literally pointed to the earpiece, and Tereslavich had nowhere else to go. He's like, okay, that's what they said. So Tereslavich was under the belief that, you know, that the positioning was wrong. However, the umpire says what happened on that pitch was it was a two-seamer on the outside, and it came in, and basically the top of that pitch, of that ball, crossed the bottom of the strike zone.
Yep.
And because of that triggered it as a strike. Now, the umpire said he absolutely would have called that a ball. He always calls that a ball. And especially with Skelton back there, the good receiving catcher, who caught it and moved it up just a little bit. You know, it's very, very quickly. Those guys can do it very smoothly. It absolutely looked like a strike to him. However, it crossed that barrier. And so far, you know, if that barrier is correct, then that's a strike. And the thing that we're noticing here, and the interesting thing I thought, was that the high pitch and the low pitch, they're the ones that you know, maybe weren't called before that are going to be, you know, are going to be strikes. So the balls are going to turn into strikes there, and perhaps the strikes at the bottom are going to turn into balls. But the corners are really, really specific. So you're never going to get that 1-inch, 2-inch ball anymore. It's very, very tight. So it's expansive top and down, and it's tight left and right.
Talking with Dan Connolly here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. Dan covers the Orioles and also covered the Atlantic League All-Star Game where the robot umps were in full force. I was surprised to read, Dan, when I was going through your piece, that so many players, or enough players, weren't aware that this was, I mean, they're at the All-Star Game. It seemed like this should have been weren't aware that the radar was going to be used that day. Was that on purpose by the Atlantic League and Major League Baseball? Did they not want to make too big a deal out of it to players, or was that just kind of, I don't know, Atlantic League kind of stuff?
Well, I don't think it's either. I think it's baseball player stuff because it was only one guy, but it was a pitcher, and he was completely flummoxed by the idea. He had no idea that it occurred until he got into the dugout and the catcher told him. He noticed that there was an earpiece in the umpire's ear, and I don't know if he thought he was listening to tunes or what the deal was, but he had no idea. Everyone else knew about it. They made an announcement beforehand. They put a press release out a couple days beforehand. They actually had the York players, the players that were actually in the area before the All-Star game. The All-Star game was on Wednesday. On Monday, they had like a test-out situation where the players from the York Revolution were there to test it out. So this was no secret. Major League Baseball wasn't doing a secret, wasn't being secretive. But literally, a guy who was a good enough pitcher that pitched the second inning in the All-Star game had no freaking clue that it was going on.
I think. Well, go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, guys. Outside of that, they all knew, and the fans knew. Like I said, they made a point beforehand to announce it, and, you know, and everything else. So everyone in the stadium should have known. But I guess the one pitcher wasn't paying any attention.
I keep thinking of the headline and how meaningful it is. The what you used in your piece of the quote: "You can't get mad at TrackMan," and. Yeah, and it sounds like just a little nice pull quote. But when you think about the psychology of a baseball bench, you can't get mad at the strike zone. That changes the psychology of an entire game. It changes the way a catcher talks to the umpire. It changes what players say to each other on the bench. When you remove that, it makes things different, and nobody misses it. Is there anybody watching? You can't get rid of the human element. What are you going to do? That's part of the game. Would anybody watching have thought about it? Would anybody watching be like, you know, this game would be a lot more interesting and exciting if players were bitching about the strike zone?
Yeah, it's funny because people talk about that human element part of it. I mean, that's the big thing. Is they don't want the human element part and to be taken away. And actually, Lee Mazzilli, the former Orioles manager and former, you know, all-star or world champion for the New York Mets, was on hand because his son played in that All-Star game. And I caught up with Lee and I asked him, and he basically said that same thing. I don't like it. I don't want, you know, you don't want it to take it out of people's hands. And I think one of the things people miss on this is that the umpires are still calling these pitches, right? They're just not ruling on them. So if something goes out, they're actually still going to be able to, you know, to do the balls and strikes. So if there is a technological problem, that can be handled by the human that's there. But for the most part, you're taking the error out for the human. And that umpire is still making check swing calls. He's still, you know, the home, if there's a play at the plate, things of that nature, still doing that. It's just you're making the strike zone more uniform. And I think that's what people lose, is that that's the important thing. And that's why you can't get mad at TrackMan, because they're making it uniform. And so it's not how this umpire weighs. It's not what he thinks of the hitter. It's not, you know, how much respect he gives the pitcher. None of that's in there. It's, are you hitting this box according to TrackMan? Now, the one thing you can complain about, as Tereslavich did, is he didn't feel it was right on him. Mm-hmm. And so he felt like it was too, you know, that ball was too low. And again, to the guy, it was definitely, I mean, the catcher caught it with his glove basically about hitting the ground. It looked like a ball. But the way it crossed the plate, it was considered just barely, perhaps, but it was considered a strike.
And how much of the ball has to cross the plate, Dan? What actual amount of ball must be somewhere within the three-dimensional strike zone? Is it half the ball? Is it any bit of the ball rotating through any bit of the zone?
Yes, my sense is that's it. If it's like anything, you know, if you have like, say you have laser sensors across something, and you touch any part in that laser sensor, it goes off.
Okay.
That's the sense that I get. And that's what the umpire kind of explained to us on that pitch to Tereslavich, is that the ball, you know, basically the top of the ball tipped the bottom of that laser or whatever you want to call it, that strike area. So that is the sense that I get, that if any part of that ball gets to that, yes, indeed. If it's crossed the plate like that, yes, indeed, that's a strike. And I think, like I said, the umpire said that he would not have called that a strike, that he thought that was a ball. There were other instances where a couple different instances where the catcher kind of, you know, smoothly moved it over, maybe from an outside pitch into the, you know, right corner of the strike zone, which would have been a strike had an umpire, or most umpires, called it. And yet, because it did not, that ball did not hit where that, you know, laser or whatever you want to call it is, that was considered a ball.
Where is the league, both the Atlantic League and Major League Baseball, at so far, as best you can tell, with some of the other rules changes that are in? They may move the mound. There's the stealing of first on a ball that gets by the catcher, even if it is in a 1-1 count or something like that. The bases are expanded some. There are others. You get a lot of wind about any other of these rule changes?
Yeah, most of the ones you mentioned have been implemented at least in the second half, which started this weekend after the All-Star game. The one that isn't, they have not touched the mound as far as moving it back or anything like that. That has not been done. That is just something that has been talked about. Actually, I believe it was this weekend, a player from Southern Maryland did steal first base for the first time in professional baseball history. Again, it was a situation that has to catch the ball in flight. If not, then, if it gets past the catcher or wherever, the ball if it hits the ground, that runner can make the decision to try and run to first base or not. And the guy did, and he made it easily. So that's a rule that is being implemented. One of the other things is if you try to bunt on two strikes and you foul it off, that's always been an out, you get another shot there. And so that's been implemented. And there's a couple other things. The timings of in between innings has been changed a little bit more. The bases, like you said, are wider, are a little bit larger now. So there are those kind of implementations that have been going on. How many of them actually get to affiliated baseball and then Major League Baseball? I don't know. But it is kind of interesting because there's several different independent leagues out there. Atlantic League's always been kind of the better one. Some of the disgruntled older players who couldn't find jobs have gone to the Atlantic League and then going back to the major leagues. So it's interesting that there is a partnership now between Major League Baseball and the Atlantic League, even if it is kind of as a guinea pig / rules implementation league.
Dan, real quick, tell us about your book, 100 Things Orioles Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die.
it sounds ominous, but it really isn't. It's really just a kind of a history book. A lot of tales. I've interviewed 50 different players, Orioles for it. There are ones. There's a Cubs book. There's a bunch of other books like this. I know there's a Brewers book as well. But it's a fun read, and it's one of those things that I had a lot of fun doing. I had a chance to interview a lot of people who the Orioles have a very rich history. I know you look at them right now, and it doesn't look like a very good team. It's the worst in baseball, but they have a very rich history, and so a lot of that was, kind of history and kind of the tales of the team.
Dan, really appreciate it. Great to spend some time with you today.
You got it. Take care.
That is Dan Connolly, and this segment was driven by Prestige Exotics. If you're planning a business trip, a wedding, or looking for the perfect ride for your child to arrive in style for homecoming, visit PrestigeExotics.com to rent your dream car. That's PrestigeExotics.com.
That's really interesting to me. The fact that the game itself could turn like this, that you get the electronic strike zone. And to a lot of people asking, I think framing
over
goes away.
Of course it
does.
There's
no need for that.
Umpire fooling. The framing is umpire fooling.
And no one's moving the umpire. You still need an umpire there. Like Dan said, if the technology goes out, if the communication goes out, you will still need that. You'll need plays at the plate. You'll need check swing calls, all that kind of stuff. You'll still need that umpire there. I wouldn't move him out of there. It's just nice to have a backup, a fail-safe system. That's what he becomes.
Other ears or other record-keeping, listening in to make sure the umpire doesn't go rogue, to make sure the umpire isn't ignoring, like Trackman says, strike. And he's like, nah, I'm calling that a ball.
So you've heard of Joe West then.
That's what I'm wondering.
You're worried that Joe might just go on his own, go Cowboy? This hour on The Score brought to you by Sharp Vision Modern LASIK, by the way. And I do think that Joe would probably go rogue if he could.
When we come back, the first of our two giveaways today, we've got a pair of tickets for the Cubs and Padres Saturday, July 20th. And next, we're going to give away a round of golf for two at the top-rated Bog Golf Club. It is one of Arnold Palmer's top five courses in the country. And in the very next segment, you're going to have that opportunity to win a lovely day of golf.
Bruce Levine had a report on 670thescore.com about what the Cubs are shopping for and the price for a very popular trade target. I hate to be the bearer of bad news. Well, you know what? I won't be, because Bruce has already done it. We'll talk about what it means to the Cubs' search for a little help as we get to the deadline. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
Stay hydrated. It is about to get really hot. This whole week is going to be incredibly hot.
Really? I haven't even looked yet. It's that kind of thing.
Yeah. This is
selling a little or a lot. Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
It's like I'll give the Terry Bores warning here that he does, and that is, if you have air conditioning, use it. If you don't have air conditioning, maybe open a window or find some air conditioning. If you have loved ones who might have some issues in that regard, do a wellness check on some people when it gets really hot like this. Be careful with your kids in car seats and your babies and in the buckets and all that. So just be smart about all this and stay hydrated. Just stay hydrated.
Yeah, with water, right? That's what you want to?
Yes, okay. That's kind of what it means.
Just wondering. I tried a different strategy this weekend.
Did you?
Yeah, it worked out.
Oh, did you know?
Oh, just a little bit. Yeah, you know, you hit a birthday and you go after a couple of things here or there. I tried your stuff, the hard seltzer kind of thing, that kind of drink.
White Claw?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't realize.
It's really good.
I didn't realize it is pretty good. I had a certain bias toward those who go after that kind of product over and over and over again. I might have been wrong. It's a solid tasting, really good, get it done kind of drink for your really warm weekend.
Yeah, we were drinking a little bit of everything. We had a big house in Hayward, in the outskirts of Hayward, about a 10-minute walk from town,
okay. And
just multiple bedrooms. It's an Airbnb. We had three families staying there, and it was pretty much nonstop something. We polished off a whole bottle of Basil Hayden's bourbon. And my cousin, who's one of the founding owners of Half Acre, also brought product, as he always does.
It's very fun.
Very generously.
Nice to experiment.
All kinds of things to have with us. And then we started just kind of buying stuff. We went into town and had tastes for various things, all kinds of different bottles of wine. Rosé was big. We went through a lot of bottles of various rosés.
Rosé all day, man.
Yep.
Did you get down to the fudge shops?
We did.
Tremblay's and whatnot?
We went to Tremblay's.
You have to.
Yeah,
you
and of course
to.
We bought way too much fudge, and then we're packing up. Like, are we really bringing this home?
There's no amount.
I don't understand the concept.
That's the thing. I mean, whether you go to like Mackinac or whether you go to Hayward,
Saugatuck, or any Kilwins,
you're looking in the window and you're seeing it made, and you're like, okay, you know what I'm gonna do? I'll just get a little bit of fudge. You know, they're gonna try it up, sell me to the half pound or whatever the hell.
I was fine with the free samples, and yeah. I was good.
And then you get, but oftentimes you can't control yourself. You
salted
buy that extra
chocolate.
Slice.
Sea salt
and
chocolate.
You're almost always leaving some of that stuff in the hotel or the Airbnb because by the time you're done with each other, I can't have any more. I can't do it. It's too much sugar.
The only difference now is when I was a kid, the women with the copper pots and the marble slabs, it was old expert fudge making women. It's just sort of what they did, like Oompa Loompas. No, now it's kids. Now it looks like it's high school kids all doing it just as expertly, and they're wearing their Tremblay's shirts and doing what they're doing, but man, the flavors are just out of control
now.
Still
the red polo up there, that's the uniform, always is.
Yep.
I told you before we hit the break that Bruce Levine has a report out on 670 The Score. It has been picked up by some national outlets about what the Cubs may be looking at toward the deadline. I told you that, you know, even though you took three against the Pirates and it's a good start to the unofficial second half, really, after the 81-game mark, the Cubs are 6-6. Their problems are not completely solved. You're still looking for people and players. What I find interesting in here, and again, you can find the report on 670thescore.com.
What is the report?
It is that the Cubs remain looking at somebody who could fix the leadoff spot for them, someone who could be a little bit more on-basey.
Well, Schwarber's been very on-basey of late.
He's a 323 on-base percentage this year, and you're right, of late, it's been nice. But they're looking for somebody a little bit more on Basie. Whit Merrifield.
Not Count Basie.
Not Count Basie. Different situation. Dead. Although you should take the A-train. The Whit Merrifield name has been brought up over and over and over and over again. Let me just read you this.
Okay.
Kansas City isn't shopping him, sources said. That conversation is a non-starter unless the Royals receive three MLB-ready players who could help them right now. I told you, man. Bruce is on it. I'd heard they think Whit Merrifield will either change the franchise for them in trade, like completely and utterly change
Whit
the franchise.
Whit Merrifield franchise transformational player.
Frankenstein prospect put together by the parts of lesser prospects to make a perfect second baseman slash center fielder. Whit Merrifield is going to be the guy who brings back Glasnow. And I mean, is that kind of dude? They think he can be a Chris Archer kind of trade for them. Or he can just stick around until they're good again. So that moves them around to a couple other players. The names Bruce mentions, Blue Jays infielder Eric Sogard, who's having a really nice season. And the splits are nice, too. Freddie Galvis or Mariners infield D. Gordon.
No.
Yeah, I don't.
He's awful.
I don't need either of those guys necessarily.
No, D. Gordon doesn't do anything.
D. Gordon's been very bad. And I, you know, here's the other thing. Can I go Daniel on you for just a second?
Oh, all over me.
I got to go grammar for a minute here. The Cubs are not searching for, and this isn't a Bruce thing. This is everybody who talks about it. Bruce didn't even write this part of it. It's everybody who's been talking about the leadoff guy. You go, we go. Kenny Lofton, all this stuff. The Cubs are not searching for a prototypical leadoff hitter.
Okay.
They are searching for an archetypical leadoff hitter. Prototype is the thing became the four you wanted the thing that led to the actual thing you want.
Oh,
the very word prototype
means first model.
It's going to change. We don't want it like this. We want it like this. The prototype is
you.
The thing that you can. Archetype is the thing that sets the edge. Archetype is the thing that is the thing you want. Archetype
is not prototype.
Is the word you're looking for.
Nicely
Nobody wants
done.
A prototypical anything. You want an archetypical leadoff man. And D. Gordon ain't either one of those
right.
things.
It's just another way of
you're
saying
welcome.
D. Gordon's bad. Right?
D. Gordon's not good. You don't want anything with D. Gordon in it. All he does is run fast, and you can't steal first in the major leagues, at least not yet.
That was very satisfying, actually. That was a good grammar geeking there.
It is not the
People
first time.
People use prototype when they mean archetype.
Yeah,
it's wrong.
Was great.
It's absolutely wrong. You want an archetypical leadoff man. That's where you're headed here. In Major League Baseball. Good.
We are headed to the midway, and we've got an update in the strategy for finding the alligator. And well, I've found the alligator, for its matter of actually trapping the alligator.
Contain it.
They realized that maybe they let things get a little stupid and a little out of control now that they've, I don't know, asked people who actually know what they're doing. Also, do you ever wonder why Wimbledon, with the all of the grass out there, that you never see a pigeon?
I haven't wondered that, no.
Never see a gull?
But now that you mention it, I can't stop thinking about it.
That Wrigley Field always has gulls. There are all sorts of fields that have...
I would imagine Wimbledon has snipers posted on the parapets.
No, they have a strategy. There is somebody responsible for making sure that there are no pigeons, and it's fascinating.
We'll talk a little more Wimbledon. There is a poll out conducted around Serena Williams and watching her lose in the championship to Simona Halep, the results of which will shock you, and meth gators.
Not like tail gators.
No, meth gators. It could be even worse. The Midday Midway's on the way. Bernstein McKnight, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel
the Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
Well, this has been fun so far. A lot of Cubs talk revisited. Just a fabulous day of Cubs radio yesterday. I was able to drive home from Hayward, Wisconsin, and hear start to finish the entire Cubs broadcast, and the energy that just came through the radio, the energy of of that sweep of the Pirates at this time, increasing their Fangraphs playoff odds by 10%, because the Brewers really, every time you start running these Pecota projections or every time you run the Fangraphs projections, it's taking into account a Brewers team that really isn't that good.
Nope, not so much.
We played back what John Lester was saying about the team being adrenaline junkies and the way that they approach the season, why they're good in the second half. Tried to square that with the things that Theo Epstein said earlier in the season. A nice conversation with Dan Connolly about the debut of robot umpires in the Atlantic League. And we gave away a pair of opportunities to play golf at the Bog.
Also talked about Bruce Levine's latest.
Yes.
The Cubs are indeed still shopping for a leadoff typey guy, you know, something more archetypical than prototypical.
Nice.
Eric Sogard, Freddie Galvis, D. Gordon, the names that Bruce brings up in his report, and the asking price for Whit Merrifield of the Kansas City Royals, reportedly three major league ready guys. That is a pricey second baseman. So, meth gators could be an issue out there in Alabama. I'll just read you this, and you tell me if it scares you when it comes to the Humboldt Park gator. Tennessee police arrested a man. I think this gets multi-jurisdictional, so hang with me for a second here. Tennessee police arrested a man after he allegedly tried to flush a dozen grams of drugs down his own toilet, something police jokingly said could create meth gators in Alabama. Officers with the Loretto Police Department in Tennessee arrested a suspected drug dealer who was found attempting to flush grams of meth down the toilet on Saturday. Once police entered the home, officers found him trying to flush the meth and several items of paraphernalia down his toilet. Here's a little hint. When you are trying to flush that kind of stuff down the toilet, do it before the cops get in. Like, you, once they're in, they're in. You can't be caught trying to flush the toilet while they're in there.
What do you mean?
This isn't meth. It's been a rough weekend for me. He was arrested after police found 12 grams, 24 fluid ounces of liquid meth, which I didn't know. I thought it was just the Breaking Bad Blue Rocks kind of thing. I didn't know we had the liquid stuff. And the drugs were worried the police, because when you send something down the sewer pipe, they say it ends up in our retention ponds for processing before it gets sent downstream.
Sure, meth rats.
So the
meth
sewer guys
spiders,
are taking pride roaches. In releasing water that's cleaner than what's in the creek, but they're not really prepared to filter the meth. So jokingly, they were saying, yeah, I mean, this could turn into meth gators, but actually it could really screw with ducks and geese and other birds and stuff that feed out of the water. We're turning animals into meth animals.
Well, if you've seen the stories about what is actually happening in our water table, the amount of selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, the amount of pain medication, the amount of more than trace amounts of this in our drinking water, because of what everybody pees out, because of what it is on the rise.
Is it London has the issue, right? It's the Thames that has...
Well, they had all the cocaine.
It's basically filled with cocaine.
Yes.
It's a cocaine river. That's what it is.
While we are talking alligators, this whole Chicago Humboldt Park thing...
Oh, it's beautiful.
It has been, by definition, a farce that in large part has broad comedic characters and, importantly, a defining characteristic of theatrical farce, the needless expenditure of energy. So think, you know, Fawlty Towers, when you think a well-played episode of Frasier. That's what this has become. And it's taken a week, one full week, for the city to realize, you know, Alligator Bob is nice and all, and he has a canoe, but they have a new plan. They're getting everybody out of there. They're getting rid of Benny the Bull and the onlookers and all the people who have been hanging out. They've closed Humboldt Boulevard to traffic between
Good
North
idea.
And Division. They've put up fencing and barricades surrounding the pedestrian paths around the east side. It's gotten ridiculous. And this new strategy came amazingly after the city consulted with Frank Robb, owner of Crocodilian Specialist Services in Florida, an alligator expert who was hired to help assess the park and the lagoon over the weekend. They now know that the onlookers and the foot traffic around the lagoon are making it less likely that the gator is going to take the bait in a trap.
Is that right?
Yeah, but has he caught a shopping cart yet?
Right, but in other words, they actually decided to call someone who may actually know what to do. And
no
he
joke.
Showed up and said, hey, everybody, go home. And Bob, thank you. Thanks for all your help. But they actually have somebody from Florida where this happens all the time now on the case.
I was thinking if you put a cage out and a bell, and when you catch it, the bell will start to ring, and then you'll see like, oh, there's an alligator, now we can get it.
By the way, the bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Football. Don't miss your chance to watch Big Ten football at Ryan Field this fall. That's number 17 Northwestern Wildcats host Ohio State, Iowa, and more. Season tickets on sale now at NUSports.com.
So I was up fairly early Sunday. Didn't catch all of the Federer Djokovic championship at Wimbledon. Missed the first set, but there were another 4 hours of tennis. Epic kind of stuff. That was good. Saw a lot of Serena Williams and Simona Halep, too. My sister-in-law was in town for my birthday, which is she's a huge tennis fan. She played in college, so we end up watching a ton of tennis whenever she's in town, and it's usually right around Wimbledon. It's really enjoyable. But I saw this after the Serena Williams and Simona Halep match. YouGov, right? You follow YouGov on Twitter. It's a public polling operation, and they just throw things out into the field and do... It's more than just like a open call for results, but it is kind of a somewhat scientific poll of just people on kind of random things. So they released a poll into the field about the women's championship at Wimbledon, wherein one of the questions was, do you think if you were playing your very best tennis, you could win a point off Serena Williams? 1 in 8 men said they could win a point in a game off Serena Williams. No, you can't. You couldn't. Even if you're playing your best tennis, you can't take a point off Serena Williams.
It depends. I probably, like a Division I college men's player could.
That's not 1 in 12.
Right.
It's just not. It's nowhere close.
Also,
no, you can't.
If you're one of these 12, please don't call.
No, oh no, please God, don't call. And here's the other
thing. Probably too late.
As you follow through this stuff and people are trying to men mostly because they're the ones that answered, "Yes, I could take a point off Serena Williams in a tennis match." The excuse for this is, "Well, if I were thrown into the tennis world at age 8 like she was and raised to be a tennis player, of course I could take a point off Serena." You don't get to be some theoretical version of yourself in this current poll. It's you. It's you walking out there in the best tennis game you have right now trying to take a point off Serena Williams. There is no damn way that 12% could take a point off Serena Williams. That's
well,
not
theoretically,
happening.
She could
no.
She could hit it into the net.
No, no, you have to take a point off Serena Williams.
That's taking a point.
No,
I can hit it long.
No. Okay, first of all, no. Secondly, she'd ruin you. And third,
well, I think
take a point means that you would have to actually earn the point,
like hit
not
it
some
by
sort of
her
unforced
or ace
error.
Her? Okay.
Right? No,
this
it's
Dan's
not
new hitting a 95-mile-an-hour fastball.
It's not happening.
They if one could do it, if, but I don't know, take a point. It depends how you phrase it. If you just are able to have her double fault, you've taken a point.
I would watch her absolutely wax every single one of the guys that walked out there until one of them actually succeeds.
You think she would? She would give a difficult enough second serve to where it could even have the chance to, you know, to be out?
I don't know. It's possible.
No.
No.
No, because then no. She'd be like, what's he going to do? Hit it back, and then I'm going to smash it at his face.
There's a reason why there are no pigeons that bedevil the grass at Wimbledon.
Is that right?
And the reason is Rufus. Rufus is a Harris's hawk. And Rufus has been hired to patrol year-round. He serves as a non-lethal deterrent. Just by being there, the pigeons want nothing to do with the surrounding area. And he keeps pigeons from making homes around there. He patrols year-round. He also patrols Westminster Abbey. He's hired to handle hospitals, airfields, and stadiums. and he knows where his favorite spots are. He knows where pigeons like to hide. So he goes on rounds, and his handler lets him fly. And away he goes, and he does his things, and he always comes back to Imogene Davis, his handler. And he knows that's where his food's coming from. That's the essence of falconry here. If they're, they're never going to leave a real food source here. But rather than having to go actually find the pigeons, he just patrols. He's just on the beat, making sure that they're not bothering anybody. And I think we should get that for the gulls at Wrigley Field. Is there anything we can do? I mean, I don't know. We don't want a border collie running around out there, but we could probably. There are local falconers. I've met them.
You've met them?
I have. There
you
was
go to Ren Fairs?
No, I went to the out in Schaumburg. There was the fishing show. That's where I saw Ish Monroe's presentation on bass fishing. And there were a whole bunch of,
Smith.
Of falconry aficionados there. They had the red-tail hawk. They had a peregrine. They had everything with little eye shades over them explaining how they do what they do. So I say we give this a shot with the Wrigley Gulls.
That is the Midday Midway. We do it every day here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. One more piece we'll get to. This didn't make the midday, but maybe we'll do it a little later. Madden has issued its rankings for players. Always a fun discussion as we're 10 days from camp. And the number of you texting in telling me that you could win, you could take a point off Serena,
no,
it's embarrassing.
Yeah, you couldn't.
It's embarrassing. Stop.
This segment's been brought to you by New Mail Medical Center. Discover the new you, newmailmedical.com. Let's get into the Cubs and this three-game sweep of the Pirates. Their first series win in, what, eight series?
That's right.
Is that right? But they got it, and they have a two-and-a-half-game lead in the NL Central with Luis Castillo, who is really an electric hurler.
Cy Young candidate.
Yeah, if you haven't watched him, he's going to be against Kyle Hendricks tonight in a game you will hear right here on your home for Cubs baseball. Mark Gonzalez of the Tribune is going to join us next. And we've got Cubs tickets to give away at some point in the next hour. Mm. So don't go anywhere. You've got the score.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.